It's Nate Burleson. I'm holding it down this week for the R&B podcast. Let's go!
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Yeah. Well, I had a long day. Not really trying to go out.
Not really trying to go out, baby.
But my lady got all dressed up for a night on the town.
Some facts for you, teach you how this game go down. As they analyze the winners, they might shout my name out, cause you bad, mommy, we can jive.
Tune into the R&B show.
Be sure to tune in.
Tune into the R&B show.
Be sure to tune in.
All season long.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That never gets old.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, wow. Exactly. Welcome to the R&B podcast. Props to Shaw Infinite for the dope intro. Check him out on SoundCloud and Instagram. This is the R&B podcast, the show with sports talk, life lessons, music from at Producer TD. We got no Mike Rob today. Shout out to Mike. He's at home. I'm holding down the fort. He'll be back next week in San Francisco during our live Super Bowl festivities. So joining us today is a very special guest. From behind the scenes, the incredibly talented senior producer from NFL Total Access, Miss Shanika Dabney Henderson, or as I like to call her, or we'll start calling her now, SDH. What's going on, SDH? Welcome to the R&B podcast.
Oh, wow, SDH.
This is a movement official that you helped create.
I played a little role.
A little?
Played a little role.
See, we already anticipated the humble approach. For everybody listening, this isn't a humble role that she's trying to play down. She is a big part of what we do here. Obviously, you know, NFL Total Access, she always has her fingers and her hands in that. R&B podcast, the R&B hotline. You're going to play humble most of the time here today, but I'm not going to let you. But before we get to that, coming up on today's show, I got to tell the people what they can expect. We have a Super Bowl preview, obviously, the R&B hotline.
R&B hotline.
Which is
one
of your doings.
Branded.
Right. Okay. I can respect that.
TM.
Facts. TM. Trademark that. And later we're going to play back an interview from the one and only Bow Wow. It's a video on YouTube. But you guys might not have heard it, so we're going to play it back at the back end of this show. Before I get to that, I got to do my quick PSA. Please make sure you keep supporting us, our YouTube videos. Subscribe, comment on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, before we get to our Super Bowl talk and our R&B hotline this week, SDH.
Yo.
Is there a subject that you would like to touch on? Because I feel like there is.
Before we get into all that, how about we just, you know, do a little, allow her to introduce herself, you know? Like, I know you have a career. You have a great career up until this point. Yeah, uh-huh. Of course. It's right here. But, you know, introduce yourself to the people.
All right. So, I'm Shanika, SDH. Just forget all that other gibberish. That's too long. I'm SDH. Senior producer on Total Access. Mm-hmm. But the story of what kind of got me here is what's interesting, and it's kind of my lifelong love-hate relationship with the game of football.
Oh, man.
From New Orleans.
Okay.
Born and raised.
Okay.
Saints fan. Mm. And as you might imagine, that comes with a lot of drama.
Yeah.
A lot of emotion.
For sure.
A lot of pain.
Ups and downs.
There's been some ups and downs.
Peaks and valleys.
A lot of downs. A lot of downs. And I'm the third of three girls. My dad realized.
All girls?
It's not going to happen. This is going to have to be my boy.
So you're the baby.
I'm the baby of three. And I had to be the boy.
So he lightweight was hoping that
it was
last one.
Let's keep it real, real. I was an accident, okay? I was like, oh, we just got back from a trip to Houston and this happened. Maybe it'll be a boy.
Okay.
That didn't happen.
Okay.
So I had the task of watching my Saints play with my dad and seeing what he was going through, and it sucked me into this game.
Mm.
It's a beautiful game.
It really is.
There are so many levels to football, and I've witnessed it on so many different levels of how it can take you from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows just as a fan.
Mm.
And I remember getting older, still being in love with the game, understanding it more. My team would lose. I'd go to the club. I'd be upset. Mm. And the players would be like, you know, they're popping bottles, they're dancing, and I'm depressed. You lost the game. Mm. Why am I mad? Mm. But that's kind of how it is. As a fan, as you invest a lot into it, you know? The players, of course, you guys invest your time. You invest your bodies.
Right.
But as fans, we invest in that too. And I think a lot of people underestimate the passion of the fan, the tears shed.
Now, before you keep going, so me, I was the type of guy, after I lost the game, I would fall into a lightweight depression. I would just sit in my room.
Okay.
And all the emotions you felt as a fan, like, that's what I would feel like. So I didn't want to be seen, heard from, or talked to until we won again, right? Mm. Because that was the whole point. But I wanted to kind of hit on what you just said. As a fan, when you saw that, like when you saw guys out and about acting as if they literally didn't care, how did that
– Oh, they got approached by me in the club.
Really?
Like they thought I was coming over about to get my groupie on, you know?
Holla.
Yeah, like, what's up, boy? I was like, hold up. So, okay, it's 3rd and 5. You know it's coming to you. You're not lined up properly on the line, right? You're not running the right route. You don't allow yourself to get open. I know it's coming to you. So I know you know it's coming. And they're like, wait a minute, boo.
Wait, whoa.
I remember talking to a quarterback. I won't name him, although I really want to. Who
you can if you want.
I really want to.
Don't worry about it. No, don't.
Mike Rob Wood. Yeah, but he's probably got a little more clout than I do in that realm.
That's true.
I remember him telling me something like, hold up. Why are you roughing the passer? Like, he started using all these football cliches.
Really?
It was the most painful conversation I think I've ever had in my life. Yeah, because he was still trying to, like, kind of get his holler on. And I'm like, dude, I'm not talking to you from, like, a potential boo perspective.
Oh, my gosh.
This is from an angry fan.
You trying to hit you with the cliches?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And then hold up. And then a friend of mine who was a male friend came over, and he's like, whoa. Too many men on the field. That's exactly what he said. Those are words that came out.
I wish I was there for this conversation.
Like, would you have punched him in the face the way I wanted to?
I would have thrown the flag on the field. Like, the cliche's going.
Yes. Unnecessary talking.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what's crazy is that most fans feel that way, though. Like, even to the extreme that, like, if a player tweets out something after a game and they lose, they're like, oh, what are you doing talking about your dinner? Or what are you doing hanging out with your family? Like, shouldn't you be as mad as I am? And I think for the majority, guys are. But then there, I'll keep it real with you. There is a group of individuals, I would say 20% of guys, that they don't care. Like, it's just a win or a loss. That's it. They don't even live in the city that they work in. They just collect a check. And then after they collect the check and after the season ends, they go right back to where they're from. So the attachment to the emotions that you as a fan feel, most guys don't.
But I just feel like it's work. Listen, if I put on a bad show, I'm going to go home and it's going to sit with me.
100%.
You know, I'm going to stew in it for a little bit because I have pride in what I do.
Right.
And so I feel like that should transfer. Listen, fans take it too far a lot of times. A lot of times. Yeah. Fans take it too far. But I think that players don't always understand there is an emotional investment. And it's easy to discount a fan perspective and be like, well, look, I'm the one on the field. I'm the one doing – but I'm the one who's all investing in this team. Fans keep the team
emotionally,
going.
Emotionally, financially,
energy,
everything.
Yes.
100%.
For sure.
So, obviously, you being a female and there being a rising female demographic – in this game, and it seems like it's getting bigger and bigger every year. Now, you grew up in it. Like, you watch your pops,
right?
Like, you know, toil over wins and losses and heartaches, and you've seen his emotions change. If the Saints won, I'm pretty sure he was just a little bit nicer.
Want to get some ice cream? Let's go to the park.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and if he lost, it was kind of like he's in a funk. So you came in it different. So talk about, like, the female who grew up in it, who, you know, some might label as a tomboy, and then talk about the female who just wants something to do. They're just buying the jersey because it's the popular choice.
Right. I think there's room for both.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfair when people get upset about women wearing, you know, cute stuff to a game. You can do that if you want to do that. There are the women who are into the stats and they're watching the highlights and they are taking this game from a very serious viewpoint. There are women who are casual fans, as there are men who are casual fans. And so I don't think women should feel a need to put themselves into a certain box to be counted as fans. Mm-hmm. I started a blog in 2007 strictly for female fans, and it was interesting to me the different types of women who were drawn to this blog. Some of them very casual watchers, and they would watch the game because their husband or their boyfriend was into it. And there were some who were, I mean, they would rip you to shreds on stats and on this play, that play. There are so many, and I think it's great that the league is finally starting to embrace all of these women.
Right.
I would love if there was a even bigger, and I think that's coming, approach to the female fan than merchandising and targeting them with jerseys and so forth. But actually embracing them as fans of the game and as people who know their stuff and who are into it on not just a surface level.
Right.
Because those women are there, and they're there in huge numbers. Women make up now almost 50% of the league's fan base.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah.
And to take it a step further, now we're seeing women being involved in not just operations behind the scenes, but you're on the field.
On the
field.
You
got the Bills organization who hired, was it Catherine Smith, right?
First female full-time assistant coach. She's a special teams quality control.
And so as a female, how do you feel about that? Because I'll talk on a couple bases, because I hear fans, and I like to listen to them because I think it's funny. Sometimes they're spot on, and sometimes, as you know, they can be over-exaggerated in their argument. And male fans will say, well, she never played the game, so – why is she coaching? And these are fans that never played the game. So I'm thinking, how could you say that? And then there's guys that say, well, if she has the knowledge, and if you look at her resume, she's been with organizations previous to this, and she worked with Rex Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, previous to this. So she knows football operations probably better than most fans do, male or female. So talk about her being hired and, I guess, the perception that, you know, people are approaching that situation.
I think that, listen, football is, it's going to follow the same path as life. Women have to kind of prove themselves in different regards. It doesn't have to be a sport. You can be working your way up in the Clorox industry and you have to prove yourself on a different level. And so, you know, football is just a microcosm of the world that we live in.
Yes.
So women are a part of that minority base that's always going to have to, I notice it just being behind the scenes in sports, that there are those moments where people feel a need to sideways be quizzing you on your knowledge to make sure that you're up on your game, or you have to prove you've got to go a little bit further than maybe some of your male counterparts, where it may be taken for granted. This dude doesn't really know that much, but because he's a guy,
that's facts,
he's going to be given a certain amount of credit.
Camouflage himself.
Exactly.
Within the male demographic. And I see it all the time. There'll be a group of individuals, all guys, and there's usually, like, if it's 10 of us, there's usually two or three guys that are just there.
Mm-hmm.
They're just there because they want to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because their peers pressured them into coming to the game, and they don't care. They don't even know who they're watching, guys on the team, what division they're in. So it's funny to me because as a player, we don't have prejudice, because I feel like if you're showing up to support me for the strongest reason or the weakest reason, all I see is your support.
Right.
I don't try to dive into why you're there. I try to give you a show because you're there.
There's room for everybody. So I don't know why there has to be, you know, and especially behind the scenes and what we see happening with coaching. What I'm really hoping is that we get to a point where women being behind the scenes in football is not a story. That would be awesome, because that means it is now so normal and so embraced and so accepted. It's shrug, you know, it's just another day in the NFL.
Other notable coaches that once held the job that Catherine Smith now has: John Gruden, Eric Mangini, Tony Sparano, and Todd Haley.
Wow.
Which is important to note for the people who kind of like shrug this off as she's getting thrown some, you know, well, it's not
some
really a coaching job.
Lightweight title, right.
Yeah.
It's facts. And San Antonio Spurs coach, there's a female on the staff in the NBA. So this isn't like out of the norm for sports in general. So I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing for the sport, especially when you say that the female fan base makes up almost 50%.
Yeah.
That is a mind-blowing number.
It's mind. It was like 43% 10 years ago, and every year a percentage just keeps adding and adding and adding. And in terms of Super Bowl viewership, it's half and half. I mean, women are right there watching it as much as men are.
That is awesome. All right, now, TD, usually you have a beat for me and Mike, but today you don't have a beat. You got a question. So
I'm thinking content here. We got a super duper producer in the house, so I want to know biggest storyline heading into Super Bowl 50: Peyton potentially ending his all time career with a Super Bowl, or Cam Newton breaking the mold and winning his first. I mean, obviously Cam is unlike any other quarterback we've ever seen in Super Bowl. He's not shy about it. You've seen his new Beats commercial; that's kind of hot. So, what would be the biggest storyline for the NFL, for sports in general?
It's got to be Peyton.
Really?
For me, it's got to be Peyton.
Wow.
And I think that it has to do with, listen, Peyton has this opportunity to end his career in this storybook fashion. Cam Newton, we haven't even begun to see what this guy is going to accomplish in the league. And so, while, listen, if he wins, I think it would be awesome. And I think, you know, particularly, I've seen this a lot, and I agree that I think for someone who breaks the mold, the quarterback mold, in the way that he does, he's not afraid to be confident. He's not afraid to dab on him whenever he wants to. I think that's great that he can be himself. He's a black quarterback. He's a young quarterback. For him to be able to accomplish something like this would be huge. At the same time, the drama of the NFL.
Right.
The Peyton legacy, this Peyton storyline that we've all been following, benched, come back, lead your team to I mean, come on. This is like a movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's like a movie.
It is like a movie. And I feel you on that when it comes to Peyton Manning. Like, every player would love to write their own ending. You know, it is storybook. It's the classic, all right, I'm going to ride off into the sunset with the Super Bowl trophy, the Lombardi trophy, and possibly the MVP, pat me on the back, I retire, and that is what every legend would love to do. But at the same time, when you look at Cam Newton and what he did this year, it's almost like you want him to be rewarded for his efforts. Like, Peyton Manning, he leads the league in touchdowns during the season and postseason at 61, and that was in 2013. Cam Newton is already number 10 on that list with 50. So the effort in which he put in 38 passes for TDs and 12 rushing TDs, I don't think there's been a guy that has put a team on his back in such a way that Cam has done it. So Cam's already a star. I guess you would almost say he's a superstar because he has a whole generation of white, black, Asian, Arab kids dabbing, swagging.
Yep.
He's brought a different element to the fan base, the youth. So for me, if he wins this, he goes into a whole different category. And I don't even know what's past superstardom, but you're talking that category of, you know, Jordan, where, you know, this generation, they're going to respect Cam for something other than being just a really good regular season quarterback. If he wins, this separates him from not only his peers, but even the legends. You know what I mean? Like, Peyton has, was it one Super Bowl, right?
That is correct, yes. He's one and two in the Super Bowl.
And Russell Wilson has one Super Bowl.
That is right.
Cam wins this Super Bowl. He's in the conversation already.
But he's also a different type of quarterback, too.
He is a different type of quarterback. And I think it could be argued he's in the conversation whether he wins or loses because of the type of season that he's had and because of the way he has carried his team. If the Panthers weren't to win this Super Bowl, I think he is still in that conversation of elite quarterback. Mm. The way he runs the ball, the way he throws the ball, the way he makes these wide receivers who, you know, generally aren't going to be regarded as top-tier wide receivers look like it.
There's definitely like an on-field aspect to this. There's also a cultural off-field aspect to this. I mean, because of Cam, especially if he goes on to win the Super Bowl, the next LeBron James might end up playing quarterback.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, that's a whole next generation of, like, if you were 6'6", 250 before, you're like, yeah, I'm going to play small forward. And now it's like, man, I could be Cam Newton.
Right.
So, there's a – I mean, but I do respect, though, the Peyton legend – the Peyton is the best footballing mind I've ever seen in my generation, my lifetime. There is a nice storybook ending to that. But
there's a storybook ending to it, and there's the, listen, Peyton got his ring, but you know what everybody says about Peyton, even with that one. He just got that one ring. Eli got two rings.
Right.
Oh, he don't show up in the big games. Right. Oh, he didn't lose this many. I mean, there is something bigger there with Peyton. And like I said, Cam, like, we are just seeing
We're just scratching the surface. We are just
He's not going anywhere.
But, you know, it's a good point that TD brings up, because you got a new generation of athletes that are coming in. And say you are 6'5", and you're 240, and your coach says, hey, what do you want to focus on? Instead of a guy automatically thinking, well, I'm going to play small forward or power forward in high school, or I'm going to play DN and rush the quarterback, this young athlete, regardless of the color of his skin, is saying, you know what? I want to play quarterback. I can throw the ball. I'm athletic. I'm good with my feet. I have skills. I can see the field. So now
– I could dab on him.
I can dab on him. So for me, that's going to be interesting to see, like, over the next 10 to 15 years, is the impact of Cam – changing the game, because we've seen this before. We've seen Randall Cunningham come in and change the game. Warren Moon, you know, tall, athletic, black quarterbacks. And then Mike Vick came in and just torched this league. I mean, undersized quarterback who was unstoppable. Now Cam is doing that 6 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier, which for a generation of young athletes really puts not only the kid in a position to make a really crucial decision, but as a parent. For me, I have 11-year-old little Nate who is – he is a phenomenal athlete. Just this past weekend, he starts off the game. He's snatching balls. He's playing flag football. He's jumping over dudes. He's looking at the ref talking about, I got PI'd. And I'm thinking to myself, man, at 11 years old, I wish I had his skill set. My wife ran track. I play football, so the genetic code is firing. And he's electric, like fast, and he gets it. Then I have my 9-year-old who – is almost as tall. Nehemiah is almost as tall as him, and he's 25 pounds heavier. Wow. This boy eats. Like, there is no stopping.
I don't want to see that his, grocery bill.
They battle each other, and Nate has the big brother kind of complex over him. But I whisper to Nehemiah, like, hey, you know you're bigger than him. Like, you can fight back. And I try to create this, like, sibling rivalry that I had growing up with four boys. And I'm thinking to myself, Nate could grow easily to be 6'2", 6'3". Right, and be a very dynamic DB or wide receiver. Nehemiah, genetically, just looking at his growth right now, he could be 6'5", 6'6". So when he was first born, I'm like, he's a big kid. Maybe he's going to be a tight end. And to your point, TD, I'm looking at my son now and thinking, I want him to play quarterback. I want Nehemiah to be a sophomore throwing to his big brother as a senior at wide receiver, because of how tall he is in his skill set. And Nehemiah plays flag football. He's played 3 weeks in a row. He has 3 interceptions and 2 of them to the house. So for how big he is, he's athletic. And because I've watched Cam Newton and even Russell Wilson and this new generation of the new athletic dual quarterback, even as a football father, I've changed my view on what I want my son to be.
Don't you think, though, beyond the – because I feel like there are parents and there are kids, young athletes, who thought they could be quarterback, but from a scouting and coaching perspective, people didn't really think they fit into that quarterback mold, and that what Cam will do will help the folks who are making these decisions to bring kids and see them as a potential quarterback in a way that they wouldn't have. Mm. When you look at some of these players who maybe they play quarterback all through high school and they get to college and they get put into a different position because they don't fit that quarterback mold.
Right.
Now when you have the success of people like Cam, these guys are going to get a second look and get an opportunity that maybe they wouldn't have. And that's huge. And I think that's going to happen regardless of what happens in the Super Bowl. Mm. Cam has already left his mark on this league.
That's facts.
He's already left his mark on this. There's nothing that he can do at this point that will take away what he's already contributed.
And
so,
like you said, he is just getting started.
He's just getting started.
So we obviously have to say goodbye to you because you're a busy woman. I see you everywhere. I feel like I'm busy, but you're constantly here at the network. So respect. We do have to say bye, but could you possibly stay just quickly for R&B Hotline?
For sure, yeah.
So obviously this is one of your babies, and it's a huge part of the show, and I absolutely love it. So, TD, we got somebody calling in?
What's up, Mike? What's up, Nate? This is Shaw, straight out of D.C., you know what I mean? I'm actually on this show's theme song. Big up for the shout-out. Big up for rocking with me. So my first question is, do players care about the Pro Bowl anymore? Are NFL players really striving to get into the Pro Bowl? How NBA players are really striving to get into the All-Star game?
First of all, respect to you guys behind the glass. He said, "I'm on the show theme song." You hear? Yeah, I like that. I can't see.
That was a little D'Angelo touch right there.
I like. Okay,
let's get Shanika's thoughts real quick before she has to leave.
We'll get her thoughts on the Pro Bowl. What do you, as a fan, and I hate saying a fan because it sounds so fan, but like as somebody that loves the game.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about what the Pro Bowl was and what it is now before we let you go?
Man, it's interesting. It's interesting because the Pro Bowl, you know, I think for one that it's helped that they moved it to come in between, you know, playoff, the AFC NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl instead of it being after. Because I think after the Super Bowl, a lot of people just sort of check out.
Right.
You know, either right. You're mad about what happened, you know, you're a little salty, or you're That's still facts. Riding your high. So I think that has helped. With that said, though, if you want to see the best of the best, which is what the Pro Bowl is supposed to be,
right.
But the best of the best is playing in the Super Bowl and you can't see them, you know what I mean? It's tough.
It's tough. So you're automatically thinking that I'm not watching
them. that's what you're saying. I mean, so many in the most political way possible. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Is there any way that you think the league can fix that?
I mean, I think, you know what I think has helped? What they've done is they've made it more theater by having this draft.
Right.
Drafting the play. I mean, I remember watching that at home and just falling over laughing. For one, I felt like my feelings were kind of hurt for the people who got drafted last, and you're sitting in that little tent.
It's the last kid.
You know,
yeah. Recess. Like,
they're fanning themselves. They're looking for snacks, like scourging. I mean, that. I felt some type of way about it for them.
But you were watching it.
But I was watching it. And so I think, like I said, I think that element of drama, the theatrics of it, that's helped for sure.
That's what's up. Well, SDH, I appreciate you joining me. Thank you for being hands-on. And I'm going into my second year, and obviously I do a few things here at the network, and you've always been there, especially as soon as you joined on here. So thank you, one, for that, and thank you for joining the show and helping us grow.
Of course, thank you. And thank you to – well, Mike's not here, but thanks to Mike. You got what you have done and how you guys have taken over this. It's more than when we were just talking about it in a meeting. It's more than we ever thought it could be. You guys have just branded it and made it your own thing. And I can't wait to see where this – I can't wait to be like, I knew him when. He won't remember SDH.
What you mean?
Like accepting.
This is going to be a show and it's going to be a movie.
He's accepting
his award. You're going to be there.
You know what I mean? It's going to be Oscar so Burleson. Like, I'm not going to get invited, but it's all good.
This is it. This is the crew right here. This is the gang. This is the R&B gang.
I have it on tape, so.
All right, thanks again.
Thanks, Nate.
That's what's up. Shanika joining us, spitting knowledge about the fan base in New Orleans. Once again, huge thanks to Shanika, aka SDH, for joining us. It was really refreshing to get her perspective, not only as a producer, a super producer, but as a female fan who's been watching and staying close to this sport since she was a child. Love hearing that. So let's get back to this Pro Bowl question from Sha in D.C. My man, Mr. Theme Song. He was asking if the Pro Bowl is something that players are excited about and are they striving for. I'll say this. One, yes, every player wants to make it to the Pro Bowl. Without a doubt. Even if they don't go, they want that nod. They want to have that title. That invitation, if you will. So not only do they have that on their resume, but other players in the league, they get to see that. Their peers get to see that. What I've seen as of lately, and, you know, I was talking to LaDainian Tomlinson yesterday, and we were just talking about the Pro Bowl and kind of how it's changed and that you get so many alternates that join the game late. It doesn't seem like the original players, just like Shanika was saying, the superstars don't have that opportunity. So when you look at the NBA All-Star Game is a who's who of who's lighting the league up. It comes in the middle of the season. They promote it heavy. We always know what city it's in. There's always a buzz about it. And you look at this game and you sit there and you watch. And leading up to it, you got the three-point contest, the dunk contest, the skills contest. And then you have the game. And without a doubt, it's the best players. By far, it's the best players. If your favorite player or the best player isn't playing the game, it's because he's injured. Because of the Super Bowl format and the Pro Bowl format, there's guys that have to say, no, I can't join this game. So then as a fan, you're thinking, well, I wanted to see Cam Newton. More than anything, I think people are like, well, you know, I love Peyton Manning. I would have loved to have seen him. I would have loved to have seen Cam Newton, Josh Norman. With their energy and Keekly, the way that he's playing, and Thomas Davis, all these individuals, I think the Panthers have 10 Pro Bowlers. So you're basically taking 10 guys, and they're all saying, we can't do it because we have better things to do, which is fine. You know, they have the Super Bowl, and kudos to them, and they definitely have to focus on that. But as a fan, you're thinking, okay, well, these replacements, quote unquote, might not be the guys that I wanted to see. So that might pull you from watching the game intently. That might stop you. There's a tremendous fan base, maybe, you know, all of North Carolina, who might check out from watching this game because all of their favorite players are playing in the Super Bowl and not in the Pro Bowl. Now, on the flip side of the coin, I have to say this. As I'm getting notifications on my phone of the guys that are making the Pro Bowl, Richie Incognito, Bridgewater, all these different individuals that were alternates and get that nod and get that call, I can appreciate that because I was once an alternate. 1 year I led the league in punt returns, and I thought, oh, there's no doubt. I'm one of the best returners in the NFC. I'm killing these dudes in Seattle. Literally felt unstoppable. I think I had 3 returns that year. But it just so happens that Devin Hester was in the NFC in Chicago getting busy.
Like, live a legend, Devin Hester.
Man, I'm looking at this dude like, bro, chill out. Like, I get a return, he get a return. I get a return, he get 2 returns. So when the season ended, they're like, well, Nate, yeah, we're going to have to give you this alternate nod because Devin Hester, he had an unbelievable year. What I do? I tip my hat off to him. I said, I appreciate it. So as an alternate, yeah, I would have loved to have got that nod. I would have loved to went out to Hawaii and show my family a good time and did my thing as a returner. But it didn't happen. So I can see fans' perspective and saying, like, well, my favorite players aren't always in this game, so I don't want to watch it. And then I can see the players' perspective of who cares who's actually playing in the Pro Bowl compared to who's playing in the Super Bowl. It's still an amazing event, you know, with the draft and having Irv and Carter and having, you know, the energy.
It still matters to the players.
100%. Does it matter to the players? Yes, we care about it. If you don't play in it, we want the nod. If you're an alternate, you're waiting for the guy who's in front of you to make it as far as possible, or even injuries like Carson Palmer. Carson's like, man, you know, I got to let this finger heal up. I'm not going to go out there.
Aaron Rodgers always misses it.
Yeah. There was a year where Randy Moss didn't get the nod, and I played with Randy in Minnesota, and I remember him just lighting the league up. It might have been 03 or 04, and he got the nod. And I'm like, yo, you know, I'm still a little fanboy. I'm like, yo, Randy, hey, what's up, man? You going to the Pro Bowl, buddy? And he just kind of looked at me like, nah, they did me wrong 1 year. So I'm not going to go out there and help promote this game when you guys shafted me. And I thought, like, man, that is the boldest thing ever. Like, this is the most gangster decision like any superstars make. Because from a young guy's perspective, I'm like, the Pro Bowl is it. If we're not in the Super Bowl, the Pro Bowl is the bee's knees. And Randy's like, nah, they robbed me 1 year. So why would I even?
2001, he had 10 touchdowns. Yeah, and that was the first time he didn't make the Pro Bowl.
That was the first time he didn't make the Pro Bowl. And after that, he was super hesitant about going to the Pro Bowl. And I thought, man, that's crazy. You want to talk about a man standing on what he believes in. Like, that right there blew me away. It was one of the many moments in my career playing next to Randy Moss where my level of respect just grew and grew. So, you know, to answer that in the longest way possible, all players care about the Pro Bowl.
He played all 16 games, by the way. All 16 games, 82 catches, over 1,200 yards.
Dumb numbers.
10 touchdowns and didn't make the Pro Bowl.
Didn't make the Pro Bowl. And then he got voted in. He was like, I'm not going. How gangster is that? He didn't care. Randy was like, nah, I'm about to chill. I'm about to go back home to VA, and I'm about to fish and relax. And
we got Randy on, man.
We got to get Randy on. I actually talked to him, man. I told him we got to get him on. He's over at Fox. But shout out to Randy Moss, man, one of the best to ever do it. So, that's our show today, TD.
Yes, sir.
We had a quick show. Mike Robb hit me up yesterday and said, hey, bro, I'm not going to be able to make it in town. I got to get some things checked out. My man said he's having migraines. And I said, Mike Robb, get that checked out. My exact words was, I love you, and I'm going to hold down the fort. He responded back, I appreciate it. I love you, too. And then he said this, and I hope he doesn't mind me sharing it. He said, I don't think people understand what we put ourselves through and the impact that has on us after football. This is right deep. Before I went on to Total Access. And I said, man, you're right. They don't understand. And if I have a chance to tell them a little bit, then I'll tell them. So for those who are listening, hit Mike Robb up on Twitter, man. Shoot him some love. My man's getting his migraines checked out. You got to understand, man, Mike Robb, he played differently than I did. I was a receiver. So I was on the outside avoiding guys. Mike Robb, he didn't have the choice to avoid anybody. So he was a banger. So you got to always hope and pray that Mike Robb is healthy, just like you got to hope and pray that I'm healthy, just like you got to hope and pray every single player that played this game remains healthy after they're done playing.
Shout out to Mike Robb. He did play quarterback, though.
He did play quarterback.
Yeah, Penn State gave him some love on Twitter this weekend.
Oh, they did. They showed a little love.
Yeah.
That's what's up, man. Shout out to Mike Robb, man, my guy. The other half of this R&B thing.
It's R&B without the R today.
That's true. It's just the B. Always. Send us your questions, your thoughts, your ideas. Hashtag RANDB. I'm at Nate13 Burleson. My man who ain't here is at Real Mike Robb. Also, send us your music. Hey, so listen, a couple things. You got to check out Mike Studd, okay? We got to check out Wisdom, who is my man back home in Seattle, who's creating a track for the show. So check out Wisdom. That's with a W-I-Z-D-O-M, hip-hop head. And then Hitman Holla, who's from St. Louis, battle rapper, who's on Wildin' Out. He works out here in L.A. for the show. That's my man. So these are the guys I need to get on the show. Mike Studd and Hitman Holla work out here in L.A. They want to come on. Mike Studd was an All-American baseball player that went to Duke, and he went into hip-hop. He made a song for his team, and after that he fell in love with it, and obviously he has a tremendous career. So shout out to him. We're going to get him on. Hitman Holla, battle scene is crazy. I'm a big battle rap fan, and he works for Wildin' Out, so maybe we can get him to come through and possibly a couple of Wildin' Out girls to TD laughing. Look at you laughing, bro.
I'm with it, though. I'm with it.
Look at Becca's like, yep, golf clap to that, golf clap to that. But I talked to him yesterday, so he definitely wants to come on. He said whenever. So, you know, I'll leave that to y'all to make that happen. But also, send us your music, your beats. Remember, holla at Producer TD. And hit him up for the R&B hotline. Reach out to him. He'll walk you through it. Let your voice be heard, and we will respond.
We had a few more R&B hotline questions we're not able to get to today, obviously, with Mike Robb being out. Some of them were addressed to Mike Robb, so okay. We'll get them in the future, though.
All right, cool. Well, shout out to the R&B hotline questions that we didn't get to. And now, as promised, here is my one-on-one interview with none other than Bow Wow. My man's talking sports. He's talking money. He's talking transition from hip-hop to music to acting. He's talking Odell Beckham, how that's his boy. It's crazy how celebs always got super celeb friends. It's a super-duper tight-knit community. He's talking Ravens, acting, music, and more. So listen up. You will thoroughly enjoy this. Here is me talking to Bow Wow.
I like that. I know we got another beat coming up later. Yeah.
Said he got bars.
I do. I got bars.
Said he got bars.
I appreciate that, TD. So we're here. We're here right now. We're joined.
Yeah.
With the presence of, I'm a hip hop fan, bro. So I'm gonna just say a living legend in hip hop. Now there's a lot of them, like you know.
There's tons.
But Bow Wow, the world famous Bow Wow, Shad Moss. I'm gonna say Bow Wow for the fans who know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
By that, but Shad Moss, the actor.
That's the actor side.
That's the actor
that's
side.
CSI,
that's the
right
government side.
Yes, sir.
That's Brody Nelson side.
Exactly. Cyber. You already know.
CSI, you already know. I can dig it. So we're joined with your presence. I appreciate you joining me.
Nah, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Right out the gate, I'm Nate Burleson. We're here. We're doing this live. It's an honor. You know, you just walked in, but I didn't really have time to talk to you.
Right.
I'm a hip hop fan, bro, and I've been following my whole career. I'm 34. So,
okay.
You know, I grew up in the culture. I live it. I breathe it. So right out the gate, I want to know, just as a fan of your career, when did you actually get started? Like, yeah. I want to know, like, the actual foundation. Okay. When was the start? Before the music?
Okay.
Because there's rumors that you was 4, 5, 6 years old.
Like, yeah. It's some truth to that rumor, what you heard. I was 5 years old. That's when I kind of found the love for it. You know, it actually is kind of funny. I started out with comedy first. It was comedy.
Word.
It was joking around and telling jokes to, you know, my mom's friends and before they would go out to, you know, enjoy their night or whatever. And then it just, you know, ventured off into music. Then the first album I ever had was N.W.A. You know, my mom is young, so just playing a lot of music around the house. And that's kind of how it happened. I learned how to put words together and, you know, repeat these words that I was saying, although it was probably words I shouldn't have been repeating at the time.
Facts.
But it just came to me naturally. Then I just picked up on it. And it was something that was just, you know, second nature. And it all happened at 5. And then that's when Snoop discovered me. Snoop and Dre discovered me around, like, age 6. Mm. And then I never looked back after that. So from 6 up until now, I'm 28. I'll be 29 in March. I haven't looked back.
Snoop and Dre?
Yeah, Snoop and Dre.
Dre was involved?
Yeah.
Because everybody knows Snoop was kind of the big homie.
Exactly, right, always.
But Dre was there?
Dre was there.
Scene early?
Yeah, this was 93. I got a picture that I could show you, actually, on my phone. I was 6 years old, and standing on East Side was Dre right here. I had Snoop right here, young Snoop, an 18-year-old Snoop.
Wow.
And we had a Dr. Dre right here with me in the middle, and that's what started the whole, you know.
You talk about legends in hip hop.
Yeah.
That's what's up, man. All right. Well, you talked about Snoop. I got a ton of stuff I'm going to ask you. So just get prepared for it.
For sure.
You talk about Snoop. I played with Randy Moss. I got drafted to the Minnesota Vikings. I played 3 years there. Randy Moss was a living legend to me.
Oh, yeah. You know,
I was a huge fan. He was one of the best to ever do it. And that was a big homie. Still is the big homie.
Right.
And he was the one that kind of taught me how to be a pro, taught me how to make this money, taught me how to brand myself. And you had Snoop in your corner.
Correct.
Living legend at the time.
Correct.
And then still a living legend.
Correct.
Talk about the influence that Snoop has had on your career and how important he was.
Yeah. He had a lot of influence into my career. And, you know, he's always given me wisdom. You're talking about a guy who's been through it all. Been through it all. Ups, downs. Been on one of the biggest notorious record labels of all time. Lived through real, real hard times, real era of hip hop.
Right.
And not just in the business. This is a guy that calls me and we talk about life. You know, we kick game about everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's more to it than just the business or the music. That's going to always be there. But it's the lively stuff that really matter, the game that he kicked me. If it's about women, if it's about, you know, me keeping my head up or, you know, just regular little things that a big homie supposed to do. You know, to lead his little homie in the right direction. Because like I said, he's been here, he's seen it all, he's done it all. So it's kind of like just leading me into that right direction and giving me that wisdom that I need. And actually, Snoop is one of the best people in the game to go to for that wisdom because he just gives off that aura. You know what I mean? He's like, he's the OG. He just give off that
aura. Got it figured out.
He has it mastered.
That's what's up.
Mastered.
So. I can dig it, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is a sports show, and we're going to weave in and out of hip-hop and sports. So we're going to jump right back into the NFL. So who's your favorite team, dog?
My team? Oh, man. I rock with the Ravens. You feel me? I've been rocking with the Ravens for quite some time. I used to, you know what I mean, go real hard for the Falcons because that's where I was raised in Atlanta my whole life. But, you know.
Back in the Dirty Bird era.
Yeah. Well, then.
Jamal Anderson.
Yeah. Well, a little then. And then when Vic came.
And Vic's your dog.
That's the homie.
Y'all got business together.
Yeah, well, we did, actually. We did. And good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And, when Vic came, it was just – we had the most exciting dude at the time in football at that time playing in the city.
That was
crazy.
That era was crazy.
It was incredible. And then when he left, you know, it was just, you know – Right. It just it took the heart out of the city, and it really wasn't the same no more. So I just kind of found this new love with the Ravens, and you know T Suggs, you know Get Well Homie,
T-Sizzle. That's
one of, one of my partners right there.
That's
and
one of course, my homies too.
Sugar
yeah.
Ray Lewis, that's yeah. that's family right there. Ray, he taught me a lot of stuff too as well, and I just you know. Been
but hold
down.
Up, though, hold up. You from Ohio though?
Like, I don't rock with the Browns.
They were just gonna throw it out
yeah,
there like
I don't
that.
Rock with the Browns. I respect the history with the Browns.
Yeah.
Of course, Jim Brown and, you know, going and going. But the Bengals, I tried to rock with the Bengals because
they let you down, though.
Yeah.
They let everybody down.
Yeah, they had opportunities, too.
Right.
And I love when Chad was out there turning up, going crazy with the celebrations.
Husman Zada.
Oh, yeah. Man, it was on.
It was on.
I was like, okay, let me – they're an hour and a half away from Columbus. Let me try to rock with them. And
right.
My heart wouldn't stick with them like that.
Yeah.
So
that's most people though. But you've been keeping an eye on Cincinnati and on Cleveland, like Johnny Manziel.
I checked him out last week. He looked good.
He threw that bomb right over the top.
Yeah, exactly. Then I saw Bill. Was it Bill Parcells? Yeah, Bill Parcells had something to say.
About
Johnny Manziel a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's definitely doing his thing. I feel like Cleveland need that though.
Yeah.
They need a spark.
Ohio
you know,
need that.
Yeah, yeah. Because they got Brown. But on the football side, they needed something, you know.
They needed something.
So hopefully Johnny could be that for them.
That's what's up, man. All right, so who's your favorite NFL player?
At the moment, it's got to be the homie, man. Odeezy.
Odell.
That's my partner.
He dumb nice.
Yeah, crazy.
He dumb nice.
Crazy.
What about his game? I'm a receiver, bro. So,
I
got an affinity for guys that's really nice at the position.
Yeah.
And he's mastered it this early in his career.
It's crazy.
What is it about his game that you like?
I just think that he's young, fast, elusive, quick.
Yeah.
I told him last week, week one, he caught a crazy pass. I don't even know how he caught it, like in between like two cats right there to put him at the goal line. And I'm like, dog, like the routes you run and how you know, get to him like that and the timing, how important
Fearless.
Timing is. Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, it is. And the acrobatic catches. He tried to get Dallas again. I told him, I said, you try to get him again for that one hand I saw you. He was like, I was thinking top 10 the whole time.
Hey.
I know you probably was, but yeah, that's my dude, man. That's my partner. Actually, we're represented by the same people.
That's what's up.
On the PR side. So we had a chance to actually, you know, get a chance to do a lot of stuff together, work together, stuff outside of the field and outside of music that we had to collaborate with. And good dude, young guy.
Yeah.
And it's my partner, man.
That's
hilarious.
What's up. All right. So I remember when you was young, you said that you was going to go to Duke.
I sure
did. Going to play basketball.
Yeah, I sure did.
This is when I was listening to Bad Way. I'm like, okay, the young boy about to go to Duke? I was like, okay.
Bad.
But then what happened, though? Just – I think it was one. Obviously, you're dumb famous, so you can't really go to Duke, and then you didn't really get the height you needed to.
Yeah, that's the problem. See, like when I would be at home, you'd be watching stuff on TV. It looked like average size people until you meet people in person. And you like, damn, I didn't know you was this tall. And it's like, okay, you know what? Nah. Let me fall back. This ain't really
let me spit
me.
These bars.
Yeah, let me go
TV.
On this. Yeah, let me go get on this acting tip. And let me leave all the, you know, athletic stuff to, you know, the athletes that do it for real.
But you still got a love for basketball.
Love basketball.
That's your passion,
it's
though.
My passion.
It really is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who's your team and who's your favorite player right now?
My team in ball, don't have a favorite team in NBA.
Okay.
NBA is different for me. I just respect the game. I love players. So
talking like a true hooper.
Yeah. So I believe this year, I'm just a loyal dude. So my man Lou Will, he was a sixth man last year for the Raptors. He's now out here in L.A. Caught that 20-piece real quick, 23-piece. My bad, Lou.
Yeah,
sorry.
Slide him on his chain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now we got to just go hard for the homies. So I'm all about rooting for my boys, you know, my friends, guys that, you know, if not in season, we hang out, we vacay together. You come over my crib, we chill, we barbecue. Just real loyalty stuff. And I just support my boys.
And Lou spit too, right?
He does.
What's up. And James Harden, one of your guys?
Yeah,
one of your favorite players?
Jay Hard. Yeah, I'm always giving him a hard time. That's my guy too.
yeah, I can dig it, man. So we talking about Lou Williams, and you talked about Odell Beckham, you know, and specifically on Odell's career, how everything has hit him at once. It seemed like after that catch, even though he was making plays before that catch, after that catch, the world just opened itself up to him.
Yeah.
As a young guy, you know.
Yeah.
Dumb money, famous, women want you, people want you, everybody pulling at you. You handled that.
Yeah.
But you handled that at a young age, though.
Right.
These dudes is 21, 22, 23, 24.
Yeah.
You was dealing with that before you hit 10.
Yeah, I think it's better that way, though.
It's better that way, that the way you handled it?
Yeah, 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 to catch it early, you know, because you're still a kid. Mm. So when they told me, like, you know, you sold 3 million records, I'm like, okay, what does that mean?
You didn't know the gravity of it?
I don't care. Like, yeah. I just want to, like, where's the free Jordans? I don't care. Like, I don't care.
Sha, you saying it's easy, though, but, like, dog, I made some M's, right? I'm doing okay. And that got to my head. You was a preteen.
Yeah, it didn't faze me.
One of the most recognizable people in the world. You can't tell me that's easy to deal with, though.
Didn't faze me. I was having more fun with the fans and just getting free clothes. You know, I was like, I get free video games and free clothes. They're like, nah, but you're nominated for this award. I don't care.
Like, where my Mecca and my FUBU outfits
at? Yeah, I want my clothes, you know? Yeah. So those type of things help me to this day to be as humble as I am and still be down to earth, because those things never fazed me. It never fazed me to where I couldn't imagine going from 5 and not being, you know, discovered, and then you put $3 million check in my hand at 21.
Yeah.
And I never had it.
Facts.
I'm definitely going to blow the whole $3 million. Like, right. I'm just being honest. Like, I'm just being honest. I'm not going to know how to act, you know. So I gradually learned how to you know, handle it, and having guys like Snoop and Jermaine Dupri and them guys in my corner to coach me and guide me, it just added an extra little – it was like a cheat code to
– It
was a cheat code to learn from guys who's been doing it, to lay it down for me to not make mistakes.
See, I feel you, man. Like, when I was in Minnesota, I did all right. You know, I made, like – a little over $1 million over 3 years, right? And then Seattle gave me a decent deal. They handed me a check for $4 million. I signed up on it. So I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I've always been a dude. I'm just another guy that just happened to make it, right?
Right.
And I appreciate the fact that the league was able to pay me as much as they did. Right. And I'm able to take care of a lot of people. And once they gave me that check, you know, the government took a little
bit. Oh, you know, they got to get their – yeah, they got to get
it was 2.4 when it was all said. So I'm looking at this joint. 2.4, I'm like, yo, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. This is and I'm a grown man.
Right.
So, like, you're saying you had a cheat code. You're saying that you had people in your corner that didn't faze you. But at some point, did it hit you? Like, was it when you got older? When did it hit you when you were like, yo, like, I'm really one of the most recognizable people in the world? Like, it had to hit you. I get it. You humble, bro. I get it.
No, it's so crazy.
I get it.
I think because I'm me, I don't see what everybody else see. Because I'm in this skin every day. Mm. So it's kind of like, it's weird to an extent. It's like, to this day, I still, like, I walk in Madison Square Garden sometimes. Like, if I go to, like, a Knick game and I look up and I'm like, I can't believe I actually sold this out 6 times.
That's crazy.
Like, this is ridiculous. And I'm like, nah, no way. I didn't do that. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, was this supposed to happen or was this not supposed to? I don't know. It's just so weird to me. So I never really sit back and really think about it like that. But certain stuff will hit me and I'm like, I just can't believe I did that. Like, I did that.
Hey, you just said something that's pretty deep. And I think that a lot of players, athletes in general, should hear that. You said, you know, I don't see what everybody else sees because I'm in the skin every day.
Every
like, for
day.
God that's dealing with life, you know, and they got the whole world in front of them, you can say that to them, and it'll hit them. That just hit me.
Yeah.
Like, they don't see what everybody else see.
Yeah, you don't see it.
Because you in your skin every day, regardless.
I don't see it, yeah. It's like when I'm doing something, they call cut, and they're like, yo, you killed that. And the first thing I say is, you sure you like that? You want to take one more take? No. That was amazing.
I know.
To me, I'm like, I ain't feel good. I want more take. But if you like it, I trust your judgment because – I'm me.
Right.
I'm not watching me.
Mm.
So I don't know what you know.
Right.
You saw something. I trust your judgment.
Facts.
You're the director. You're the head coach.
Facts.
I'm a rock with you.
Facts.
So let's play ball. Let's do it.
100%.
So
that's what's up, man. Hey, DJ TD, man. Let me get a little something before we get to this next subject. Cause we gotta keep the music in here, man. We
gotta keep the music going.
I'm digging that. Hey, I'm going off script, man. I'm not messing with that. Listen, we got shot in the house, man. Hey,
yeah.
Listen. So let's talk about music.
Let's do it.
Like, recently, there was an announcement that you was linking back up with JD, and y'all dropped a little something, man. Y'all had the little video on the boat.
And on the yacht.
So I'm like, yo. Hey, my bad. Yacht, not boat.
Nah, same thing.
I ain't got no yacht in
there. Same thing.
So I get them confused. So I'm like, yo. I remember texting my boy. I'm like, yo, Bow Wow got some heat.
Appreciate it.
He got some heat coming.
And that's Jermaine's record, by the way.
That's Jermaine's
record. I have yet to drop mine. So that was Jermaine's first look off of his EP project called The Love Award. That's the name of his actual project.
It's gonna be fire.
Yes, it's crazy.
But I know you got some heat, though.
I definitely do.
I remember you doing a sit down. You had a little video. You was talking to the fans. You was talking about the whole Young Money thing, and you was like, "It was a business decision. Like me and Birdman, the family, we all cool. It's all love.
Yeah.
We just, you know, needed to go, you know, our separate ways right now." Mm-hmm. And I've had heat. You were basically saying like, "I've had heat," and I wasn't able to let it out.
Right.
And I'm listening to it. I'm like glued into the screen. Like, damn, what you got in the vault, bro?
It's a lot.
Like, you got a lot in the vault.
Yeah.
You've been sitting on a lot.
Yeah. Before we started this interview, when my phone rang, when I said, oh, I got to call you right
Eli.
Back. Yeah, that's Puff's, like, right hand.
He's like, I'm going to call you right back.
Yeah. So it could be a situation where, you know, a management type of deal that's great go down between myself, Puff, and, you know, it's some spectacular is going to happen within, like, the next couple of days with me. And it needs to, like I said, because I got so much work. I got so many record songs with Wiz Khalifa, songs with man, you name it, everybody. I mean, just about everybody. And these are songs that I've been doing since I was on Cash Money. So I got verses. Me and Wiz and Juicy J have a song together. We did the song 3.5 years ago. Mm. But to this day, it still sounds spanking brand new. It's fresh, and it's still relevant to what's going on today.
Facts.
So I have like 100 songs like that that are just sitting.
That's crazy. Hey, you know what's sitting, crazy? You know, just like I know, I'm just a fan, you know what I'm saying? But I really breathe hip-hop. I love that. So, sorry, TD, my bad. I'm cussing.
It's real. It's a real conversation. We forgot the cameras and the lights on and all of that.
I'm tripping right now. But hip-hop is, I feel like it's unforgiving. Like, when you, like, if you leave for a long time and you try to come back, it's almost like, bro, you was gone too long. And
a
perfect example for me is Nelly. Like, Nelly was on fire. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, you know what, I'm about to do this TV thing. I'm about to do this movie thing. And he came back, and hip-hop was kind of like, I don't know, Nelly. I don't know. We got a couple cats that's in your lane.
Yeah.
We good on you. And I was kind of mad because, like, how you going to turn your back on one dude that gave you hit after hit after hit?
That's true.
My point is, it's not like that with you. Like, hip-hop, like, it's almost like they've been waiting. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, when we going to bring us something back? Like, hip-hop ain't never turned their back on you and was like, we forgot about you. It's almost like, okay, we see you doing what you're doing. We see you doing TV, movies, liquor. We see you doing it.
Right.
But when's the music coming back?
Exactly.
So for you, is it TV or is it music? Is it both? Is it hard to juggle? Is it a stress to bring the music to us? Like, I want to know.
It's me being comfortable. I keep it a buck all the time. I'm like, you know, just so comfortable being on set, so comfortable waking up with a set schedule, so comfortable knowing what I'm doing next Friday, as opposed to the music business where I wake up, we don't know what's going on.
Mm.
There's no type of set schedule, no nothing.
No dates, no
man,
leases.
They don't teach you nothing. There's no challenge. I feel like when people say, my fans are like, yo, Bad, when you're going to put out the music, it's been a long time. I say, well, it's just too easy. That's why. I've been rapping since 5. And I break it down like this. I've been rapping since 5. I'm 28, right? So let's say 15 years. That's 20. 15 years, somebody's whole entire career.
Facts.
If you play 15, 16 years in the NFL, it's time to move on to commentating.
Right.
It's time to move on to something different.
Right.
So that's kind of how my breakdown was. It was just backwards because I started young. 15 years later,
facts.
I'm still young.
Facts.
So it's like, you're supposed to keep doing it. Keep doing it. And then, to me, I'm like, well, if I came in the game at 21, it wouldn't be cool for me to be 36 rapping anymore about what I was rapping about.
That's
when I was 21. It's time to move on and milk. I milked this cow. It's time to go ahead and get some Emmys, put some Oscars next to these platinum plaques, and show them that I got the whole, you know, the whole thing.
Package.
So I have my days where, you know, I want to put out stuff. Or I want to do this. But then I'm like, you know what? Nah, not right now. I'm very strategic, you know. But as of right now, it's the acting thing is just, that's what everybody wants to get into. I was just with Fab the other day. We was having lunch, Fab. Me and Fabulous, and he told me, how you like that acting thing? I'm really trying to get into that.
Yeah.
You know, but not knowing, his fans probably don't know, he really wants to cross over and do
right.
what I'm doing.
Right.
But just don't know how. It's that hard. I like a challenge.
Yeah.
I love waking up in the morning having them butterflies like, you got to bring it. If not, it's 100 people on set. You're going to, if you mess up on your lines, you're going to. I love having that pressure on me. When I get the mic and go on stage, it's like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next. Well, whatever.
I feel you on that.
I like a challenge.
I can dig it. You talked about, you know, the collaborations that you got on deck, stuff that you got just in the vault, stuff that you're probably possibly going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your best collabs, in your opinion,
okay.
over your career. And then after that, I want to know, I'm gonna put you on the spot. I need that top five.
Okay.
Your top five.
My top five. Okay, cool. My best collabs off top, I gotta go. Me and Amarion got a classic with Let Me Hold You. The Van Draw sample.
Fire.
Me and the boy Chris Brown. We got a
fire
number one record together. We did two. Well, one number one record and a top five record when I Ain't Thinking About You.
That was fire.
Me and Sierra Like You, that was huge. That was a number one record. Gotta say, me and T-Pain, when we click, it pops too. It's weird with certain artists. When you click with other artists, it's
work.
It meshes. Yeah, it meshes right. Out of My System, that was a good one. And then probably one of my best verses that I've done to date that I would say on the record was "Oh, I Think They Like Me" remix myself, Jermaine and Franchise Boys. Hey. That was definitely like probably one of my top. You know what I mean? As far as like verse wise, and I've worked with everybody from Destiny's Child. I worked with so many people, man. Yeah. Like so many people, I had a chance. I was fortunate enough to work with a lot of
people.
Well,
give me your top five hip hop
in
artists.
Order. Or
nah,
just,
I ain't gonna put that just, pressure on you.
All right, cool.
I ain't gonna put that pressure.
I like the pressure though. So
you know what? Give me that in
number,
order. Then let's
number,
talk about it.
Okay,
let's
here
talk
we go.
About it.
I gotta go. Number one, Pac. This is mine right here.
Okay, I can dig it.
Number two, gotta be my Uncle Snoop. I gotta throw Dog in there off top.
Facts.
Three. I gotta go. See, this is where it get hard.
This
right
where it get hard.
It gets real.
I'm listening. I'm like, you about to jump coast? Is he going to the east? Is he staying in the west? Like this, I'm listening, bro.
Three. This might throw you for a loop. I gotta go to GOAT. LL.
Oh, I like that.
Looked up to LL because like it's kind of like similar career paths. The ladies, him, movies, TV, myself, kind of similar. So I kind of watch L. Love L. Down to two more spots. I'm going to throw Biggie on there. Yeah. Only because, like.
Even though his career path was short.
Short, right. And for me, it was more like I was a West Coast dude. Like, I was running with Def Row back in the day. So, I was heavy West Coast out. It was I really wasn't listening to a lot of East Coast rap like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just wasn't, being honest. And then five to round it off, this is where I'm going to really spin you for a loop.
I'm a hip-hop head. You're not spinning nothing
around here. I like him. I like this guy I'm going to put at five. I like him for, number one, the girls loved him. His wordplay was crazy. And he was fresh. And that's Special Ed.
Woo! Come on, man. That's
Special Ed.
That's gonna throw me for a loop.
I got it, man. I like Nas. I wish I had six. I gotta throw Nas on there.
Nas, yeah.
Yeah, I like Nas.
Nas, one of the best storytellers of all time.
Of course.
He had that crazy track, man. The joint on the Nostradamus album.
Nas was hard.
Yeah. Let's talk about TV.
Let's do it.
Let's talk about CSI, Cyber.
Let's do it.
Brody Nelson.
Yeah.
That's the next evolution of what you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Still got movies on deck.
Oh, yeah.
Still doing that. I know you're reading scripts probably on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But talk about this show and what you like about it. Going into season two, right?
October yeah, season 4th. Two. Yeah, the fourth, man. Right. What I like about this season, better than last season, is the fact that I get a chance to be more of myself. Even down from the clothes that I'm wearing.
Facts.
Last season I wore a lot of suits and vests and ties and stuff. And this season is more of, you know, Zara, you know, sweatsuits, joggers, Nikes, kicks, the typical Bow Wow wear. But you still see Nelson, though, all day. We got Ted Danson on the show now, which is a big hit.
That's what's
up. We're talking about a TV icon, a legend who was on the original CSI as well. He was on Cheers. He was on a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So bringing him on board with us, along with Patricia Arquette, Oscar Award winner last year for what she did with Boyhood, it just makes it all just balance out the right way. Mm. And this season we're tackling on not just the cases, but what happens with these characters, you know, the backstories. You know, everybody knows you just turn on these shows and you just catch the bad guy and you go home. It's like, what happens once they catch the bad guy? What happens at home?
Right.
You know, we know people that go to work and work 9-to-5s, you know, they might have got an argument with the wife and they come into work, might have a little attitude. Like, what's going on behind the scenes? And that's what we're giving them. We're giving them the real, and we feel like that's what the people can really relate to, and that's what's going to make this season bigger, badder, and better this season.
The storylines are crazy. That's what's up, man.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you joining me, man.
Nah, thanks for having me, dog.
I'm Nate Burleson.
For sure.
Shot Moss.
Appreciate you.
I'm going to say Bow Wow just because I like saying it, bro.
It's
an honor,
bro.
Though. It really is an honor. I appreciate you joining me, man.
Man.
DJ TD, let me get something on the way out.
On
I ain't saying you got to spit anything. I ain't going to put that pressure because, you know, I mean, you're an actor now.
I get to just kick back like this.
I know you hear that beat, though.
I get to just kick back.
That beat kind of fire, though.
I thought you was going to bust some bars.
I'll get some. It's not. Hey, DJ TD, can I spit some? All right. Listen, now, I just play football by trade.
Okay.
I'm really a rapper, though.
All right. All right.
I started rapping the same age you started rapping.
Okay, say no more.
I'm from Seattle. This is a little something about Seattle. Hey, check me out. Hey, yo, this is my city. Feel like this is my city. Football player turned to mini mogul, feeling like Diddy. Yeah, the streets of Seattle. See, I was raised in Skyway. Was sharing clothes with my bros that rocking fashion my way. I say, I made it. Yeah, I made it. Lion blood under the beeline suit. Yeah, I'm creative. Was a cub with no world. So passive, so humble. Now I'm a king. Ain't a thing to conquer this jungle. Gotta hunt to survive. So my prey better pray. God bless the lion to feed his pride and stride every day. I got my town on the back. But the weight is a gift. North, yeah. West, we the best like DJ Khaled. And shh.
Hey.
Hey, let me stop, man. Nah,
all day,
you, man.
You already know. Yeah, up, check him out. Check him out. When I get on this call, Pup, I'm going to tell Pup he got to come up here.
Damn, man, to get you. Know, let me get on the remix.
Yeah,
that's
I got to say
want.
No more. I got you. It's nothing.
Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Dameshek here. Make sure you check out the Dave Dameshek football program. You can watch it on YouTube, NFL.com. You can listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher or NFL.com/podcasts. We look at the world of pro football and the game called life.